Yo, yo, yo. Welcome everybody back to the BRBP podcast. As always, it is your guy, Bully Rye, alongside co-host Big Tech. Big Tech, how you doing today?
Man, I'm doing all right today, man. Today was kind of the day off, man, so I was able to do some running around and fix what I needed to. So yeah, I'm ready to get this started.
That's what I like to hear. Yeah, we're after a one-week hiatus, we are back on the air. Make sure you follow us on social media at BRBT Podcast on Twitter and send any questions or anything you want us to talk about over at our email address, brbtpodcast@gmail.com. Got some cool stuff for you today. We're going to talk some football. We've got some big games going on this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
We got some fun stuff to talk about from last weekend. So before we get into the NFL, Big Tex, I think I talked to you before. Did you get to catch any college football last weekend?
No, unfortunately, my internet was down in my house. And I guess like somebody around my house had hit one of the cables that was underneath the ground. Because there's a whole bunch of yard work just getting done around my house. And basically, I didn't have cable for the whole weekend. So I was trying to watch it on my phone, and it just was not working. But, you know, hey, you got to win some, you lose some, man.
That's right. Well, for those of you who are tuning in, again, this is week four of the college football season. We actually had some pretty interesting outcomes. North Texas knocked off Arkansas 44-17. That's an SEC team losing big to a team like North Texas.
Something
you didn't see coming.
Let's go, Texas boys. Let's do it.
So I'm trying to think. Matter of fact, that was actually from the previous week. I don't know why my scores are showing up funky right now. But nonetheless, the big surprise from last week was the loss Virginia Tech took to Old Dominion. Virginia Tech was a top 25 team last week, and they dropped to Old Dominion by two scores. Pretty interesting game to watch. Outside of that, you had Texas Tech dominate Oklahoma State. We're going to talk about Texas Tech a little later in the program. You had Kentucky with probably one of its biggest wins in quite some time, dominating a ranked Mississippi State team 28-7. You had a top 10 at the time, a matchup between Stanford and Oregon that was exciting, went to overtime, and Stanford was able to pull it off. Some really exciting college football last week. My Gamecocks.
I think that I might have picked, I don't know if I picked it with you, but I think I might have picked Old Dominion to win that game.
Well,
I was like, I just got a feeling they're going to knock them off.
Yeah, unfortunately, since we took the week off last week, we did not get to pick games, but I probably wouldn't
be
in that game to pick. But nonetheless, my Gamecocks did win big over the Vanderbilt Commodores, another big game coming up this weekend. From week five, if you missed it last night, it's currently Friday, the 28th of September. I guess I should have mentioned that at the beginning of the show. Miami throttled North Carolina last night. North Carolina is just not that good this year. Miami had three defensive touchdowns in this game, won 47-10 against North Carolina.
But, you know, North Carolina, like we've said before, is a basketball school.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, they get beat in football and they get shellacked. I mean, well, they don't get that same type of recruitment, I don't think.
I ran into a guy today who was – I was wearing a Gamecock shirt for Football Friday at work, and I met a produce manager who I'd never met before, and – he said, I guess we're going to have to get him a Carolina blue shirt. I said, what are you, a North Carolina fan? He said, yep. And I said, man, did you happen to watch that game last night? And before I could even get that out, he said, it's okay, we're a basketball school. So,
hey.
So yeah, we're not the only ones thinking that.
True.
It's now time for a segment that we like to call Break It Down. Some happenings around the NFL over the last, last week and a half or so. We're going to start off with Le'Veon Bell. We've talked about Le'Veon Bell quite a bit in our podcast between his holdout. Still not reporting to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Late last week, Pittsburgh announced that they were going to place him on the trade market. Big Tex, what are your feelings about the Le'Veon Bell situation? What do you think happens? Do you see him getting traded? Where could you see him getting traded to?
Oh man, there's my gut tells me that Le'Veon is probably going to get traded before week eight. I mean, of course, you know, that'd be
trade deadline.
A trade deadline. He'll probably be gone, I'd say probably week six. I just feel like that the Steelers, they've got this stance now where they feel like that James Conner is the man. The only thing that's going to make them shoot themselves in the foot is if James Conner goes down with an injury. If he goes down with an injury, they're automatically going to try to get Le'Veon any way that they can. And the problem is that they know that he is not going to re-sign with them next season. He's not going to. They haven't shown any faith in him in years. So basically they've just been blocking other teams from getting
him. I find it shocking that neither the Pittsburgh Steelers nor Le'Veon Bell, I feel like they neither one of them have handled the situation properly. I think, granted, we've talked about in the past that Le'Veon Bell, you know, he deserves to get paid like the top running back that he is. Yes. But when you see him posting Instagram videos, you know, having fun down in Disney World when the rest of his teammates are showing up to camp and playing this, that, and the other, it's not a good look for him. But at the same time, the Steelers have done their best to make sure that they could pay him as little as possible.
But hold on. Let me jump in real quick on what you said, though. Yeah, he might be posting pictures on Instagram and stuff like that, but those men have contracts. Le'Veon Bell does not. Le'Veon Bell said he wanted to retire as a Steeler and that this was going to be his best year yet, and the Steelers still put him in the same predicament that he was in last year and the year before. So at this point, Le'Veon is like, dude, just like Kirk Cousins was, I'm tired of signing this one-year deal. You know, yeah, I'm getting this guaranteed money. I'm excited to make this money. But I want a contract that I've earned. I want a contract that shows that a team has faith in me. Le'Veon Bell, he has no team that has faith in him right now. And the Steelers have made it look like that Le'Veon is this horrible person and that, you know, he has abandoned everybody that's on the team and blah, 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 blah. No, that's not what he's doing. What he's trying to do is secure his future. He's 26. He knows that he's probably only got two, maybe three good years of running back left in his legs. And he's been injured before. So it's like, I don't know, man. I feel like it's all security. I feel like that it's all been security this whole time. And the Steelers don't want to give him that. And I don't understand why, when they have supported Ben Roethlisberger, who has been through all this off-the-field nonsense. I mean, yeah, he's cleaned it up in the last couple of years. But, I mean, he was going through all kinds of – I mean, like, Le'Veon Bell got in trouble for smoking pot.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't get in trouble for locking some girl in the bathroom and trying to rape her in the bathroom. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not what was going on. And I will also say, I don't know exactly what happened in that bathroom or not. That's just what
they
said.
Well, there was also a nightclub a VIP room as well. So,
yeah. Like, he's had two different instances of something silly going on.
Now,
and Le'Veon just didn't get a contract.
Now, granted, there's also been a news story about Ben Roethlisberger that allegedly Donald Trump introduced him to Stormy Daniels, and he made Stormy Daniels uncomfortable. But that's a discussion that we can have another time. Back to Le'Veon Bell, I think the chances are probably very likely that he does get traded before the end of the year. If you had to pick a team that you think he can get traded to, I know I was listening to Colin Cowherd, and he thought the Colts, and I'm not remembering the other team that he mentioned, but he thought the Colts was a potential a landing spot for Le'Veon Bell. Where do you think we could see Le'Veon Bell landing by the deadline rolls around?
To be quite honest with you, I could see a team like the Colts reaching out to him. I could see... I know that the Jets have said something about it. I could see a team like, the Seahawks.
Yeah.
You know, there are a whole bunch of teams that just have question marks. The Dolphins could even use somebody like him. You know what I'm saying? Like, he could go to the Patriots. And, I mean, I know, of course, he might not, but Would you not if the Patriots reached out and said, "Hey, Le'Veon, we want you to come and play for us. You're not going to have to carry the ball 400 times, but we'll make sure you get fed."
Can you imagine Le'Veon Bell on the Patriots? I can't.
That's what I'm saying, though. If the team that signs with him, either A says we're okay with you leaving at the end of the year, or B says we are going to make sure we extend you at the end of the season, he's going to go. He's going to be like, all right, cool, whatever. Get me out of Pittsburgh. But he's not going to go to some run-of-the-mill trash team. He's not going to go to the Jets.
Yeah.
The Jets don't have the pieces that he wants. He wants a championship. He has been on a championship team.
Mentioned a couple teams. You mentioned the Dolphins. I don't think the Dolphins are necessarily a suitor because I think that they have high expectations for the rookie Kalen Ballage, who's not seen the field yet this year. But nonetheless,
he hasn't seen the field yet. How high are their expectations?
Well, they've got Frank Gore and Kenyon Drake that they just signed, but they're not gonna activate someone to the active 53-man roster or whatever it is when they have two perfectly healthy backs. The Dolphins are 3-0 right now, so he could wind up there. He might not.
He could. You never know what happens at the end of the season.
It would be crazy if he landed up in Oakland.
See, I thought about Oakland twice.
I mean, Marshawn Lynch was already retired once.
He has. And then after Doug Martin, they got Jalen Richard there. But I could see him end up in Oakland. But see, then again, I can't see Le'Veon Bell going to Oakland. I don't think that he'd be able to put up with Derek Carr's inconsistency. And I don't think he'd be able to put up with Amari Cooper not catching the ball. He's not going to be able to deal with that.
Yeah, well.
He's going to have an expectation. He's going to want to go to a team that is going to have a wide receiver that he can trust. He's going to want to go to a team with a quarterback that he can trust. And he's going to want to go with a coach that he can trust. So you're looking at coaches that have had longevity, that have been with their teams for a little while, or at least a team that has the ample pieces to where if he steps in, it automatically makes him a contender.
Well, it definitely sounds like we're both agreeing that Le'Veon Bell will get traded, and it will be interesting to see who he gets traded to.
If he goes to Seattle, it's over, bro. It's over. It's over. It's going to look like it's literally going to look like the Wishbone from like old school Nebraska. It's going to look like that if it's Russell Wilson and Doug Baldwin and Tyler Lockett and Le'Veon Bell. It's going to be out of control.
We all need to pay really close attention because we're already in week 4 of the NFL season, so this is going to have to happen sooner or later. Let's move on. The next topic on the list, I guess, if you want to call it that. You just made the list. Jimmy Garoppolo. High expectations for him getting his big contract in the offseason, signing a long-term deal with the San Francisco 49ers. Tears his ACL last week in the game against the Chiefs. What does this mean for Jimmy G? What does it mean for the 49ers? Big Tex, let's get your thoughts on that.
Oh, man. How unfortunate.
I really agree.
It literally feels like that the injury bug that plagued the then San Diego Chargers, now LA Chargers, the injury bug that stuck with that team, it seems like it just crawled up the coast. It
really did.
And jumped on the 49ers and was like, okay, so all the starters, you're suspect.
Yeah. Jared McKinnon went down. You had Marquise Goodwin, who's supposed to play this week, but he went down for a couple of weeks. Now you've got franchise quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo going down. I honestly was concerned about the 49ers before the Jimmy G injury. I think outside of the exception of maybe Matt Breida, everybody on that offense is now suspect when it comes to fantasy football. Last year,
all of them are droppable. Except for Kittle and Breida.
See, the problem with George Kittle is that last year in the time that C.J. Breathard, I guess that's how you pronounce his last name, when he was playing, He and George Kittle did not have a very good connection on the field. That's been discussed on the Fantasy Focus podcast on ESPN. So I honestly think I don't know how the 49ers recover. I think it's as sad as it sounds. I hate to say it, the 49ers season seems to be over here in week four.
It seems like it. And do you think that they're going to tank, or do you think that they're going to try to finish?
You don't like to think that an NFL franchise is considering tanking in the fourth week of the season. Yeah, but they're not the Browns. I mean, they still got some talent somewhere on that field. But I think it's too early. I think we're going to see them at least give some sort of effort. But I think by week 10, when they've only got one win on their schedule, they're finally going to say, you know what? We've got a really good core coming back next year. Let's get some of these young guys in. Let's get them some play time. Let's see what we have. And let's get a high draft pick. And let's help build around Jimmy Garoppolo and Jerick McKinnon. And who knows, maybe they'll go out and try to get another receiver, because I haven't been that impressed with their offense to begin with.
Okay, so let me butt in for a second. Okay. Answer me this. How are you, as the coach, the head coach of the 49ers or GM of the 49ers, how are you going to approach somebody in free agency and go, we want you to come and play with Jimmy Garoppolo and Jerick McKinnon? Both of them tore their ACLs this year. Jimmy tore his later than Jerick McKinnon did. Also, watching Carson Wentz and everyone else that's been hurt by their ACL, and especially the ones that got hurt, not in the first couple of weeks or before the season, but, you know, week two, week three, week four, week five, most of those people didn't even make it back in time to start for the first game of the next year, because the recovery time for an ACL is extensive, and it's all about your rehab. I've torn my ACL before. I've dislocated my ankle before. I've had these injuries before. The time that you have to take, just like Stefania says, first of all, you have to fight the injury itself. When you finish fighting the injury, then you have to fight your mind. And you have to tell yourself that you are okay, that you can still do this, that it may not happen again, because it can. But you have to make yourself believe, just like when I coach cheerleading and gymnastics, you have to make sure that the kid understands, yes, you have a risk of hurting yourself, but as long as you do things the correct way, stretching, technique-wise, everything that goes with it, as long as you do that, you are less likely to get hurt.
Yeah, from that standpoint, I guess I can see where you're coming from. But at the same time, I mean, I think the Jimmy Garoppolo injury, it was a non-contact injury. He was trying to go out of bounds, and it just, his leg planted wrong. I didn't see Jerick McKinnon's injury. I don't.
But how dumb is that?
Well,
like, let's be honest.
At the same time,
there's been
a lot of ACL injuries this year due to weird circumstances. I mean,
But how many quarterbacks? Well, how many quarterbacks tear their ACLs?
Well, in years past, Tom Brady is the reason why people can't tackle low on the quarterback.
Yes.
Carson,
not caused by him.
Yeah, Carson Wentz tore his ACL last year.
When his knee got sandwiched in between two different people, not because of him. The whole reason why Jimmy Garoppolo is on the shelf right now is because he was trying to be a hero. That is the same thing that happened to Robert Griffin too. You try to be a hero and you get yourself hurt. Instead of he could have just ran out of bounds, salvaged the rest of that drive. He may have torn his ACL on the very next play.
Well, you got.
Maybe it was a ticking time bomb. But if he would have just run out of bounds, he wouldn't have hurt himself.
Yeah, you've got Deshaun Watson, who tore his ACL in practice last year, non-contact injury. So there's plenty of quarterbacks the last few years that have torn their ACLs. So I don't.
But I'm talking about in that type of instance.
Yeah, no.
It was the situation to me that was stupid. The ACL tear, nobody wants that. That's just like the cat that tore his ACL that tackled Derek Carr. That sucks.
It's going to get to a point where, I mean, you've seen the tackles that Clay Matthews has made on quarterbacks that have been clean tackles. And he's gotten
clean.
He's gotten called for roughing the passer. You've got a guy who tore his ACL trying to hold up from getting a roughing the passer call. I forgot what game that was in.
It was in the Dolphins and Raiders game.
Yeah, so it's just – it's one of those things that, you know, the quarterbacks can get hurt regardless. Eventually it's going to have to be something along the lines of – I don't want to say two-hand touch, but that just seems to be the direction they're going. No.
They have to – they just like with you and I, when we talk about things, you tell me about things from your work, or I tell you things about my work, you have to make sure that you give enough information. And in this situation, they say you can't land on top of the quarterback. Yeah, but what body part can't land on top of the quarterback? What do you mean I can't have my weight on top of him? This is a tackle sport. I'm throwing my body weight at him in the first place. So how am I supposed to manipulate my body in a way to make sure that the quarterback is safe? Well, you look at it. You look at the dude from the Dolphins, very clean quarterback tackle, or quarterback sack, I'm sorry, and he tried to twist his body to the right to make sure he was out of the way, and his right leg hit the ground quite awkwardly, and there goes your ACL. Yeah. And this is just so that he doesn't give his team a 15-yard penalty. They're trying to dodge 15-yard penalties and tearing ACLs. I know it's only happened once, but it shows that it can happen because of the way that you tried to change the game.
Well, getting back to it, I think it'll be definitely something worth watching to see what happens with the 49ers this year going forward without their new franchise quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo. Sticking on the subject of quarterbacks, let's talk about Baker and the Browns. Baker Mayfield coming in relief of an injured Tyrod Taylor, and leading the Browns to their first victory in almost two calendar years. Earlier this week, Baker Mayfield was named the official starting quarterback for the Browns. When Tyrod Taylor is healthy, he will be the backup. Big Tex, we've talked about the Browns a lot on our podcast, too, with the amount of talent they have on the field, both offensively and defensively. What do you think Baker Mayfield is going to bring to this Browns offense?
Absolute and utter joy, to be quite honest with you. And I do want to say this. Nobody cares which way you pronounce Tyrod or Tyrod's name. Listen, man. Tyrod Taylor is, what, 30 years old now?
Oh, God, I don't even know.
He's got to be 30 years old, 29, 30. Tyrod Taylor, bruh, we've been calling you Tyrod since you were a rookie.
I know.
Why are you just now trying to change your name? Like you went to a court one day and was like, I want my name to be pronounced this way rather than that way.
Let's put a tilde over the Y. At least he didn't change his name completely like Chad Ochocinco did. Baker Mayfield definitely, you could tell the crowd, when he entered the game against the Jets, the crowd was energized. The offense was energized.
But see, the buzz, though. I was sitting watching it, and I felt the buzz, too. And I'm hundreds of miles away sitting in Charleston, South Carolina, and I could feel the energy. The minute that he hit the field, you could feel it. It was like, oh, shoot, something's about to pop off. You know? And then all of a sudden, he's in there, and he's throwing strikes, and he's taking risks. Everything that Tyrod Taylor was not doing. But if you think about it, every quarterback that goes, except for Baker Mayfield just now, and I could kind of say Johnny Manziel, but every quarterback that ends up, it has gone through the Browns lately, has been a quarterback that goes in there and tries to play conservative, tries to make sure that the team doesn't lose. Well, if you notice, that's how you trap yourself. Yep. You have to be able to take risks. Like, dude, how do you know that A.J. Green is going to catch a touchdown when you throw it 50 yards down the field? Well, you got to throw the ball 50 yards down the field first. Yep. But if you don't ever take those strikes, you never get to see those results.
What does the saying go? You miss all the chances that you don't take, something along those lines. So, yeah, no, I completely agree. You're going to see
– oh, yeah.
You're going to see – I felt like Tyrod Taylor was definitely playing a role that I'm not going to turn the ball over. I'm going to be safe with the ball. And that offense was anemic for two and a half weeks. Granted, they only put up 21 points against the Jets, They still came back and won that game, and Baker Mayfield led the charge. And I think it's going
to
be...
First of all, Tyrod Taylor, I hate to say this. If Baker Mayfield had come in at halftime against the Steelers, they would have won that game. It wouldn't have been a tie. And the only reason why I say that is because when a person comes into the game like that, it honestly felt like they had just gotten Aaron Rodgers back from going down in the first half with an MCL injury. That is the way that it felt, because everyone was catching the football. Everyone was breaking tackles. Carlos Hyde looked like he was 5 years younger.
Yeah, it's Carlos Hyde. Oh, man. Carlos Hyde has looked great as of late. Resurgence in Cleveland, if you can believe those words. I said it before the season. I thought the Browns could win 6 to 8 games. I still feel that that's the case. I mean, they get a favorable matchup this week with a winless Raiders team. Granted, they're going to Oakland, but the Raiders just look lost right now. Amari Cooper is inconsistent. They can't get the running game going. I heard a stat earlier today that Jared Cook leads all receivers for Oakland in either receiving yards or receptions, one or the other. Jared Cook,
the
perennial underachiever in fantasy football at the tight end position, is a top 10 tight end right now in the NFL, which is...
That's what happens when you take, when you get 60% of your yards in one game.
Yeah, I mean, not to mention...
That's what happens.
They gave John Gruden a 10-year contract, and if this year goes the way it keeps going, and he goes through, let's say, 5 or 6 weeks next year with this same sort of offensive output, and they just traded away Khalil Mack that we've already talked about on the podcast before.
And Khalil Mack wasn't coming back in the first place, man.
For Gruden to come out and say it's hard to find pass rushers in this league, when they had Khalil Mack, all they had to do was pay him. I found it astounding. But yeah, like I said, Cleveland's got a chance to win 2 straight and to have a winning record for the first time. And
can I say one thing about Derek Carr?
Absolutely.
In this situation, everyone needs to take very, very, very good notice of this. Derek Carr has thrown over 300 yards every game. He just is not throwing touchdowns. There will be a regression. He will regress more to the mean, and he will start throwing more touchdowns. Cleveland cannot go out and just think that they're going to win this game. I wholeheartedly think that they will, because I just feel like that something to happen with the Raiders is going to fall apart, as it always does. It's just, I don't know, man. I think that a lot of people are starting to get off the Amari Cooper train. A lot of people are like, oh, John Gruden. Let me tell you something, man. How long did they let Jeff Fisher stay with the Rams? How many years did he look like he was absolutely screwing up the Rams? Yeah. And then look at how smart he looks now by how many great players that they have that are under contracts all the way up to 2020 and 2021 and 2023. And I think that, I mean, just like look at that. Look at the prowess that Derek Fisher and his staff showed by drafting all the players that Sean McVay is making look so fantastic now. What? Like, if Jeff Fisher would have stayed maybe a couple more years, it might be Jeff Fisher that we're talking about right now.
Yeah, well, the problem is Jeff Fisher was able to recognize talent. I heard another phrase earlier today, game recognizes game. But
yes.
Jeff Fisher does not know – I don't think he knew how to put it together. I mean, we saw it in Tennessee. Vince Young was a Pro Bowler, and then all of a sudden he fell off the face of the earth.
I won't blame that on Jeff Fisher, though, man. You're talking to a Texas fan, man. Vince Young was weak.
No, Vince Young and Jeff Fisher, was weak. They also butted heads real hard. Now, granted, obviously he fizzled out for more reasons than that. But I don't think Jeff Fisher helped that situation any. But let's move on from the surprisingly bad Oakland Raiders to a surprising upset from last week. when an undefeated Vikings team invited in what looked like the worst team in the NFL, Buffalo Bills, and got throttled at home. Now, the Vikings were without their star running back, Dalvin Cook, in this game, but you assumed that you could still feel you know, comfortable in starting the backup running back, Latavius Murray. You felt comfortable starting your receivers from Minnesota, be it Stephon Diggs, Kyle Rudolph, Adam Thielen, and Kirk Cousins pulled a Kirk Cousins, and they got shellacked. Does this say more about how inconsistent the Vikings may be going forward, or does this say more about how unlikely the Bills are to continue being as bad as they were for the first 2 weeks of the NFL season?
I don't think either way, to be honest with you. In the first instance, talking about the Vikings are very, very weak on the left-hand side of their offensive line. And Kirk Cousins was getting swallowed. It was like the minute he was slapping the ball, he was taking the two steps to hand the ball off or to, you know, fake the play action, and they were in his mouth. It was a great game plan. And I think Minnesota went in thinking that they were just going to walk all over him. And they were like, oh, Josh Allen, he's going to come in like Nathan Peterman. I mean, Nathan Peterman has been consistent to throw 5 interceptions almost every time he's played. So they automatically thought, oh, well, Josh Allen's going to come in here. He's going to be shook up. And Josh Allen came in and was like, look, man, I ain't afraid of y'all. It's my time. I'm a first-round pick. Let's go.
Well,
and – he took it to him.
Yeah.
But I know that the Vikings defense was banged up also.
Well, I think so, I think for starters, I think the Vikings may have looked for granted the fact that the Bills, though they looked really bad through the first 2 weeks of the NFL season, they still have NFL talent on that team. The Bills were sick of getting embarrassed, so they came out prepared to make a statement. I believe they did. Having said that, again, we're one day removed from the Vikings Rams, I guess you might call it instant classic, from the Thursday night game on September 27th, when it seemed like the Vikings and Rams were going back and forth the entire game. Now, the Vikings did lose that game, 38-31, but their offense came alive. Both offenses came alive. It looked like a Madden video game where nobody could figure out each other's defenses, and they were picking them apart, and it was a fun game to watch.
Run that 9 route.
Yeah. So, a lot of talent between the Vikings and the Rams going away from the Bills game from last week. I tell you what, if you didn't start Jared Goff last night, you better start thinking about starting him in your you know, fantasy lineups going forward.
You have to.
I mean,
you have to.
I know
he's taking risks. He's making the throws. He's making the long throws, the short throws. He's throwing people open. He's throwing into the tight windows and sticking it to people's hips. Jared Goff is on fire.
The most astounding thing about it is that with most of the teams, when it comes to fantasy football, you have one, maybe two wide receivers who are fantasy relevant. The Rams have Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, and Brandon Cooks, all who scored in double-digit fantasy points last night. Plus, you've got one of the best running backs, if not the best running back in football, in Todd Gurley, scoring in double-digit points. This Rams offense, to me, is probably the most prolific or potentially prolific offense in the NFL, at least this year. You know, it's not the Peyton Manning record-breaking season, but it still looks like the Rams could be just unbelievably just ecstatic and exciting to watch.
I think they're going to be completely and utterly unstoppable.
Well, speaking of unstoppable, I'm glad that everything that I've talked about is transitioning so well tonight. Speaking of unstoppable, what about Patrick Mahomes?
I know
you and I have talked about this a lot. You took flyers on him in fantasy leagues, said, you know what, I don't know if he's going to be great, but I still got a feeling. So I'm going to take a chance and I'm going to draft him regardless. I know you said you lost one of your fantasy games in week one only because you didn't start Patrick Mahomes.
Only because I didn't start Patrick Mahomes.
You started him now. Patrick Mahomes now has more touchdowns through 3 weeks in the NFL season than anyone in history. He passed Peyton Manning with 13 in his game last week. Now, it seemed like the Chiefs fell flat in the second half of that game.
They did.
So,
and yes.
What do you expect from them going into a game on Monday night against the Denver Broncos, a team who, you know, is a divisional rival? The last few years they've been known for their defense, but does Patrick Mahomes, after having, you know, a lackluster second half of their game last week, does he pick it back up and just continue to thrive like he has the last few weeks?
To be honest with you, I think he will. I don't think that he had a lackluster second half at all. What I think happened was is that they got – like the game script changed, and the adjustment at halftime wasn't the same, you know. Because even if you're lighting somebody up, you going in halftime, you have to switch what you're doing or somebody's going to find out what you're doing. And sometimes sometimes that switch that you make puts you in a position where you're not going to be in the best strategy, or, you know, you won't have the best game plan. And then, you know, you have to tweak it from there. And a lot of times, if you don't pick the right strategy going into the second half, you can mess around and lose all the momentum on one play.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's going to have a problem. I think that he's going to start throwing interceptions. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he's basically still a rookie, so he's going to make some mistakes. But the way that he's come out so far,
it's remarkable. He's got a cannon for an arm. I just mentioned a minute ago that the
Rams. You know, he played at Texas Tech, so, you know, Texas boy.
Yeah, well, I mentioned a second ago that the Rams had three fantasy-relevant receiving threats. Plus a stud running back. Well, the Chiefs are in the same boat. They've got Tyreek Hill, who is one of the fastest, if not the fastest receiver in the NFL right now. You've got the talented, probably top five tight end in Travis Kelce. Sammy Watkins has looked really good in the limited action we've seen him in this year. And then obviously they have, Spencer Ware is only not starting because he got hurt last year.
Yep.
But the starting running back, why is his name?
But yeah, like if the running back goes down, the running back that's behind him is just as dangerous. Yep.
Yeah. So
yeah, you're right.
So why can't I say the name of the starting running back for the Kansas City Chiefs? Big Tex.
Kareem Hunt.
Thank you, Big Tex. I don't know why I drew a blank.
It's all good, man.
Probably because I don't have him owned on any fantasy teams, which is
neither do I.
Not helping my record by any means. The last thing that I have to talk about, there's not really a fun way to transition into this other than, Go Lions Go, a team,
bruh.
My Detroit Lions,
Can I do it?
If you want to, I mean, that's your call.
Carry on my way, what's up?
There you go. Yeah. First,
yes, sir.
First 100 yard rusher since Reggie Bush a few years ago. If for the listeners who don't know, I claim the Lions as my favorite team when my closest to hometown team, Carolina Panthers, drafted a certain starting quarterback that is still there. So I have been on the Lions bandwagon since Calvin Johnson was in his prime. So,
oh, do we miss him?
The fact that
as an NFL, we miss him?
So, you know. And we could, I could have a whole show about some of the Barry Sanders highlight tapes that we've seen, The Lions looked really bad through 2 weeks of the season. One of my best friends is also a Lions fan, and he talked about how he did not like the Matt Patricia hire. Matt Patricia was known for defense, and the defense just looked awful so far this year. They got blown out by the Jets at home on the opening weekend of the NFL season. They almost came back against the 49ers in week two, but week three against his former team, Matt Patricia put it all together. My Lions dominated the Patriots. The score was only a 16-point difference, but that game was dominated by the Lions and by the running game of Kerryon Johnson. Now, there's a lot of talk about the Patriots because the Patriots are now sitting at 1-2. Do the Patriots... Are the Patriots maybe past their prime? Everybody talks about how quarterbacks, once they reach a certain age, they stop playing as well.
No.
My personal opinion is once they get Julian Edelman back next week, Julian yes. Edelman is going to be the spark that they need in that offense. I honestly think they start the momentum this week against the 3-0 Miami team. I've got New England upsetting Miami at home in Gillette Stadium.
I think they will too. So if I could say anything, this is the way that everyone should think about the Patriots offense right now. The Patriots just can't seem to get the stick shift into gear. It's like every time they go to push the clutch down and they go to push the gear in, it stops.
You know,
the reason why it stops is because there's nothing to make it go into gear. Julian Edelman returning next weekend will put the machine into gear. It'll make everything so much better. Tony Romo, because Tony Romo football is playing in the background right now.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
On NFL Network. And his wife is fine. Ooh, boy. Man, he's had some beautiful women. Go ahead, Tony Romo. Anyway, sorry. Let me bring it back. To me, it feels like that Chris Hogan, although he's not super fast, he is efficient in stretching the field. And then basically after that, you got Gronk. And that's it. I mean, Josh Gordon hadn't even played yet. There's no telling what he's going to do to this receiving core. I think he's going to be Randy Moss-esque, but I don't think it's going to happen until next season. I think that it's going to literally take him this whole season to get his bearings with playing with so much talent around him, because he's always been the talent. So I think that this is going to be like a growing up situation for him. And I think honestly and truly, I just feel like that the minute that Julian Edelman steps in on the football field, like in a live game, everybody's going to be chomping at the bit to play Tom Brady, because he's probably going to go for like 400, three or four touchdowns. Like, I'm just being serious. You can see it. Look at the attitude. It's almost kind of like when Aaron Rodgers and the Packers were like 0-4 like a year or two ago. And Aaron Rodgers was like, look, dude, just relax.
Yeah.
We still got 12 more games. Just chill. Things will turn around. Just relax. So I don't think they're going to be in too much trouble. But if they lose to Miami and they lose decisively, there might be a problem.
Yeah, so I think, first of all, you mentioned Josh Gordon. I can't remember if we got to talk about that trade or not. Obviously traded from the Browns after he reportedly suffered a hamstring injury during a photo shoot, a promotional photo shoot, and a non-team-oriented event.
In the words of anyone that has watched Friday, how do you get fired on your day off, bro?
So, yeah, I think there's a provision in the trade that if he isn't activated for more than – for 10 games or more, that the Patriots receive another draft pick. I think that the Patriots may err on the side of caution with Josh Gordon, and we might not see him play that much this year. So that, first of all, they can bring him back next year with a full year in the system under his belt. And they get to get their conditional 7th-round draft pick. I still, as much as talent as Josh Gordon possesses, he doesn't make the greatest decisions. We all know that.
Wait, hold on, though. I don't think the Patriots are going to purposely take Aaron on the side of caution so that he doesn't play. Because it would be kind of screwed up for them to wait until there's only 10 games left in the season. And then that game before, that first game that he's supposed to play, be like, oh, no, his hamstring is messed up. That way they get that 7th pick.
Yeah,
I don't think they're going to do that. I think that if Josh Gordon is a go, Tom Brady is like, he's going to be fine. Yeah. Josh McDaniels said there's no problem.
Yeah, there's talk that he may play this weekend. If I was a betting man, I would say they would hold Josh Gordon out, and I think we would get Josh Gordon to debut the same week that we get Julian Edelman back. It'll be, like I said, fun to see if the Patriots can get back on the right track coming this weekend against the Dolphins. You know, I said that was the last thing that I had for us to discuss the NFL season. I kind of wanted to discuss the Houston Texans. You know, they looked like the best offense in football last year, similar to what Kansas City looks like this year. And they just don't seem to be able to put it together. I mean, they're winless on the year, going to play the Colts this weekend. Big Tex, do you have any thoughts on the struggles of the Houston Texans?
Yes, of course, because I have Deshaun Watson in one of my leagues. And Deshaun Watson is actually backing up Patrick Mahomes. This is the only reason why I'm okay with that. Deshaun Watson is playing scared. He's afraid that if he takes off, or that if he tries to take a risk, that he's going to tear something again. That's what I think is his problem, to be quite honest with you. And you can just see it when he's in the pocket. He does not look like he's comfortable ever. He has those, what they used to say, there were a couple quarterbacks that had the problem, but their feet would never, never, never look like they're ever set. They had those, like, happy feet, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, the whole time, they're bouncing, trying to jog, trying to move. Like, there's never a situation where it's just decision, set, throw. Decision, set, throw. It's never like that. So, I don't know, man. I feel like that he's standing still too much.
Well,
he's standing back there like Big Ben, and he doesn't have the body to take hits like Big Ben does.
Well, for starters, that offensive line is atrocious.
Trash.
They, you know, Lamar Miller's quietly having a decent year. Now, granted, they only lost to the Patriots by 7, but that game was a lot. It was a lot more
lopsided,
you know,
than,
yeah, lopsided than that 27-20 game looks. In week 2, they got beat by a Blake Gabbert or a Blaine Gabbert. That's how crappy that quarterback is that I can't even pronounce his name right. They got beat by a Blaine Gabbert led Tennessee Titans team. Granted, it was again a 3-point loss to the Titans. But, you know, then they get beat by the Giants in week 3. I think you're onto something. I think Deshaun Watson, at least for a while, was playing scared. Once he got Will Fuller back in the offense.
It looked like he kind of broke out of it last game.
Yeah.
It did look like it. You're right.
Yeah, because Will Fuller had 5 catches for over 100 yards. When Will Fuller seems to have a much more reliable connection with Deshaun Watson than we've seen in years past. Obviously, you're always going to get DeAndre Hopkins being a part of the game plan, especially with both of them going to Clemson. I think Bruce Ellington came down with an injury last week, too.
Yeah, he's IR, I think. I think they put Bruce Ellington on the IR.
I need to look that up because they'd be really upset as being a former Gamecock. And I was hoping I was hoping for a breakout year this year for Bruce Ellington. So... I've got the Texans. I'm not sure if it's one of our pick 'em games off the top of my head, but I've also got the Texans being able to come back and get a win over the Colts this coming week. So hopefully, at least for my sake, we can see the Texans. I got another very
The only way the Texans are going to win is if Deshaun Watson outthrows Andrew Luck.
Well, again, you think about Andrew Luck at the end of the game when the Colts needed a Hail Mary. They took Andrew Luck out of the game because he clearly doesn't have the arm strength to do it and to throw a 55, 60-yard pass.
At that distance.
Well, he admitted so after the game, so you're going to get a lot of dink and dunk passes. Houston's defense isn't giving up a ton of points, but with the talent they have on that defense, specifically J.J. Watt, Whitney Mercilus, Jadeveon Clowney, Jonathan Joseph,
Clowney, I think, will be out this week.
What have you heard about Jadeveon Clowney? Because I haven't heard anything about his status.
Cheese and geese. I heard it earlier today when I was watching Good Morning Football. I'm going to have to research it and figure it out.
He will miss. He missed the game against the Titans with an elbow injury.
I think they were saying that he was going to be out of this game, too. But I might be wrong.
Yeah.
You know, then again, you know, we are human. So
anybody with the Texas defense, go look out for that Jadeveon Clowney injury.
For sure.
Folks, that has been a very long edition. A 1 week.
I have one more.
Okay, you know what? Yeah, let's not end it there. Big Tex, bring your one more to the table here.
Congrats to Eric Reed signing with the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Geez, McGee's. Eric Reed was a hawk for the 49ers, and I would love to play free safety behind Luke Kuechly. Just saying. Well, you know what I'm saying? I would love to have somebody like that in front of me that I know will be able to hold it down for, you know, at least up to 15 to 20 yards out from the line of scrimmage so I can focus on my job. Eric Reed is going to be a difference maker for the Carolina Panthers. Just want to get that out there. Sorry.
Well, you know, you mentioned the Panthers. I thought you were going a different way in the NFC South with the surprise team that the Bucs have been. The Bucs.
You know what? I'm not going to say anything about that, man, because one, I don't want to wish bad on my Bucs, but two, we already saw a little bit of the Fitz tragic sizzle. We saw a little bit of it. Until and to be quite honest back. With you, I'm not going to lie. I don't feel like that since Jameis is back that he should start. I feel like that Fitzpatrick should be able to play until he fizzles out. That could be the first quarter of this next game. It could be halftime of this next game. It could be after the bye week. But I don't feel like that Jameis should be able to just walk in. No matter how much of a saint they said he's been the last couple of years, and everyone needs to understand the stuff that he's serving time for now happened 2 or 3 years ago, and he's just now having to serve time for it. And they said, all of the Buccaneers, his teammates also have said, he's been a saint. He stayed out of the trouble for the last few years. So it's not like he's a bad guy and he's still making dumb decisions. But if you have Fitzpatrick in there throwing touchdowns and involving everyone, I mean, let's just look at this. How many times did Winston miss DeSean Jackson last year?
Yeah.
How many times did he miss him? And Fitzpatrick hit him on the very first play of the game in week two.
Well, Winston, in his defense, Winston did look really good in the preseason. I did want to give a big, I don't know how to say this because we're supposed to be a family show, a big blank you to Ryan Fitzpatrick, because I scored the second most fantasy points in a league. This week, I had 190 fantasy points. And thanks to Ryan Fitzpatrick's attempt at a second-half comeback, I lost 197 to 190. So, Ryan Fitzpatrick, thank you for that. This is going to end this edition of our show. We're actually about to record another show that will include fantasy football talks, more fantasy football talk. We are going to get into the segments of the show that we like to call Fast Count, our podcast Pick'em, and I've got some exciting news that you all need to be following us on social media for in our segment we like to call The Finisher. So for Big Tex, I'm Bully Rye. Stay tuned for our next episode of the BRBT Podcast. Don't forget to follow us at BRBT Podcast on Twitter. Send us an email. Anything you want to hear us talk about, brbtpodcast@gmail.com. And if you're not down with that, we got two words for you.
Stay woke.